Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Okay, I'm joined now by Marie Crowe from the RTE Sports Department and Mark Tye of the Sunday Independent. Welcome, guys.
Thanks, Brendan.
Thanks a million.
So over the past 2 years, you've both been working on a joint investigation by RTE Investigates and the Sunday Independent. And you spoke to numerous former Irish women's soccer players about their experiences of misogyny, homophobia, and in a number of instances, predatory sexual behaviour. Can I ask first, Mark, what was the catalyst that started you both on the path of this investigation?
Yes, it was October 2021, and at that time, The Athletic, which is now owned by The New York Times, they broke a big story about sexual harassment of players in the US soccer league, the Women's Soccer League, by an English coach called Paul Riley, who's now banned from managing and coaching footballers. And one of the whistleblowers there that alerted the media to what Paul Riley was up to with his players was Sinead Farrelly, a brilliant player who went on to play for Ireland, just recently retired. And unknown to myself and Marie, we were both in contact then with an Irish footballer who said, you know, to us around the same week, I think Marie might have spoken to her a day or two before me, that, you know, if you think this kind of thing hasn't been happening in Ireland, you're mad, you know. So both of us were working independently then for about 6-7 months, trying to stand up the story that was something similar happening in Ireland.
Okay. Marie, for background first, tell me about the state of play in Irish women's soccer in Ireland in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, so there was football for women, organised football. There was leagues everywhere, but it wasn't something that was very glamorous. There wasn't people banging down the door wanting to play football at the time. It was there and lots of women played, but it wasn't clear what the pathways were. There wasn't professional footballers. Well, there was very few professional footballers in Ireland at that time. It was quite haphazard. Knowing how difficult it is to get facilities now, it was a lot worse back then. There wasn't a pathway for women, a clear pathway to go on and play for Ireland. It wasn't something that lots of people wanted to be involved in, but those who really wanted to play did find a way to play.
Okay, so Mark, the women then who spoke to the programme and to you, they were part of a course run by the FAI. Tell me about that course.
Yeah, so we spoke to women across a number of teams, but kind of halfway through the investigation, we stumbled upon a group of young women, some under 18, some, you know, adolescents, a little bit older, who were involved in a course which was state funded in part, or in large part, you know. And as we delved into this course and we spoke to the women involved, we found that the senior coach on the team had made sexual advances on a number of those players. And this was kind of a real hard part of the investigation, I suppose, just tracking down these women. A lot of them had lost contact with each other, so we were scrambling around on Facebook. You know, some of their names had changed, you know, if they'd been married or they weren't on social media. We were tracking them down through land registry documents, planning files, that kind of thing. What was really surprising, I suppose, when we eventually got to sit down with them or talk to them, and we were saying what we were doing, we're investigating, you know, coaches who've made sexual advances. They were like, you know, someone would burst into tears and go, "Oh my God, I knew this day would come." And some others would say, and what was kind of almost universal was that they would say, "I thought I was the only one."
So just explain to me though, what they were on this course, they were young women, how like teenagers, in some cases,
like 16, 17, 18. The eldest one was 21.
And presumably these were young women with dreams as well.
Absolutely.
If they were on this.
Yeah, that for me is actually the saddest part, Brendan, that these were girls who in a time when football wasn't available to everybody really wanted to be footballers. They absolutely loved it. For them, it was part of their identity. It was what they were good at. It was what set them apart from everybody else. They wanted to be footballers. They wanted to be coaches. They wanted to be like the men who had all these opportunities. And those dreams were taken away from them. That's what they wanted to do. And it never happened. And for some of them, it even turned into to a nightmare that they're still living with.
So there was a certain background in the culture around this course, wasn't there, of sexual innuendo, kind of misogyny, kind of what used to be called locker room kind of talk, yeah?
Yeah, it was very, very much like that. It wasn't a nice environment. It wasn't a healthy environment for young women to be involved in. And it wasn't what they signed up for, Brendan. Like, they wanted to go and be footballers, to play 9 to 5, for that to be their job, what they wanted to do. And it was the opposite to that.
OK, but then it went beyond that into unwanted sexual advances as well. Tell me about that.
There's a different varying degrees, I suppose, of experiences for women. So,
OK.
In some cases, there were consensual relationships between coaches on that course and some of the women. But I suppose you have to step back and look at it from where we are now. And, you know, even then, was it ever appropriate for a coach to start dating a player? You know, the coach is the head of the pyramid. You know, if you annoy the coach, if you get on his bad side, you know, you might not be in the team. You know, you're dropped. So, you know, what your dreams then of you know, mm-hmm. progressing, making it to the national team or making it to, you know, to England to play for a big club. And that was no different for these girls. So the power imbalance was massive. And when you bring in personal relationships, sexual relationships with young girls where there's an age difference of 10 plus years, what chance did the girls actually have to say no? You know, what control did they have over whether they could say, actually, I don't want to go on a date with you. I don't want to be in a relationship with you. So,
and this was the gateway for them. This is... For them was their starting point. For some of them, it was the first time they'd left home. It was the first time that they found themselves in a situation where they might have an opportunity to go on and do something. It meant everything to them. And as Mark said there, chance to play for Ireland, chance to go to England and maybe get some sort of a career. That's all they wanted. That's all they cared about.
And these guys were the gatekeepers to that, really. Yeah. I mean, you hear one of the women saying that you wanted to be his number one. You wanted to be on the team. And I think, is it the same woman says, she didn't say no, but she didn't feel like she could say no, seems to have been the situation for some of them, yeah?
Yeah, some of them were put in a situation where their future was controlled by these coaches. What they wanted in their future, their dreams, the decisions that were going to be made about them was going to be made by those people who were in charge.
Okay, and we now understand possibly a lot more than we did back then about that, as you say, Mark, that huge power imbalance. Were there any guidelines, Mark, in place in the FAI at that time? I mean, it wasn't the Stone Age either.
No. And I suppose at the time, the FAI kind of had, if no one's saying there's problems, we'll just leave them all alone. There at that time, up until the, I think, mid-noughties, the women's football was governed and run by something called the Ladies Football Association of Ireland, which was an affiliate of the FAI. So, you know, speaking to people who worked in the FAI, they were kind of happy enough to leave them alone. If they didn't hear there was any issues, they'd leave it all alone. And we understand that the kind of the first guidelines only came in 2000, kind of ethics guidelines that were sent around in a club. So that what we have found is that there was nothing there really, and no one they could go to say, you know, I have concerns about what's happening here.
I think that was a big problem, that they felt that there was nobody that would listen to them. And they didn't, there was no clear processes in place to air any grievances. There was no one to turn to, nobody to ask for help. And they just felt that they didn't have a voice, and they felt they didn't have a voice until now as well, Brendan.
OK, but did anyone make the FAI aware of what was going on or attempt to?
There were a couple of cases investigated in the 90s. But whether the FAI was alerted to them fully is something that's up for debate, I suppose. We go through that in our reports. So like this is kind of a unique investigation that the Sunday Independent have done with RTE Investigates, and it's been a privilege working with the people in RTE, and Marie has just been unbelievably dedicated and hardworking. And so this is the culmination of 2 years. Like, we have a 5-page spread in the Sunday Independent tomorrow, you know, where the women are going on record, they're photographed, we're naming the coaches, we're going into all that kind of detail, and then you can see the women, the pain in their faces. You can see what the stories they're telling in the documentary to be broadcast at 9:30 tomorrow. And, you know, as a journalist, I'm a print journalist, I love print journalism, and I think people need to read this, but also they need to see the women for themselves. And
because some of them had never spoken about it to anybody beforehand, and
didn't know that
they didn't know, and that was the one thing
issues.
That they thought that they were the only one, and that's one of the stark things that comes out of this, that they had lived with this for 25 years
and thinking, the guilt they felt, because they thought they were to blame, and that they caused this mm-hmm. to happen. You know, and I think the release from finding out yeah. that they weren't the only ones was just immense.
And then they went on to talk to their families about it, to tell their friends, partners, and just to get the help that they needed, to get the, I'm not sure if I can say closure, but to at least be listened to. I think that's been really beneficial for them.
And since, obviously, in the last couple of days, people have become aware that this is happening and that the programme's going to be on, and Mark, your investigation in the Sunday Indo tomorrow. Are more women coming forward, Marie?
Yeah, it's been quite an interesting couple of days, really. Even yesterday, just getting emails from women who want to tell their story, who want to back the women up as well, recognising the bravery of these women, just people wanting to support them, wanting them to let them know that they're going to make a difference for everybody coming through. I think that's really important for these women who've been brave enough and amazing to stand up and tell their story. They know now that the next generation, anybody else that wants to have a voice, that they're going to have it because of what they've done. And to be honest, Brendan, I think that this is going to be the start of a different era for not just for women's sport, but for sport, where the right safeguards are going to be in place and hopefully people will be listened to as well.
Okay, so this weekend is not it's the end of an investigation in one way, but do you think this is the beginning of a broader reckoning possibly?
We just looked at one time in football. There are a lot of other sports out there. There's a lot of other similar environments. I think this will empower women that maybe felt like these women that spoke up, that felt they didn't have the voice, that nobody listened to them. And now I think this will give other women an opportunity to tell their story, to put up their hand, to explain what happened to them. And again, just be part of this change that's going to come because of the bravery of these women who've spoken to us.
OK. And if women want to get in touch with either of you?
Our emails are on the RTÉ website and the Independent website as well.
OK, Mark Tighe and Marie Crowe, thank you very much. RTÉ Investigates Girls in Green is on RTÉ One tomorrow night at 9:30. And you can read Mark Tighe's...
and Marie's.
and Marie, you're involved in the Sunday Indo part of things as well. OK, so Mark Tighe and Marie's investigation will be in the Sunday Independent tomorrow. Anyone who needs support with the issues raised here can go to rte.ie/helplines.
Text 51551. Brendan O'Connor on RTÉ Radio 1.